because we never tire of Jamie's British jokes. This is MuggleCast episode 268 for July 28th, 2013. This week's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/mugglecast. Welcome to MuggleCast episode 268. We are nearing the end of MuggleCast, but hey, we got a bonus episode out earlier this month, and as we've been telling people, we've been hoping to bring back some co-hosts who were with us previously. And look who's here this week, Jamie Lawrence. Hello, Jamie.
Hello, everyone. Oh, it's great to be back. It's weird to be back. I came on and I said Andrew sounded precisely the same as he's always sounded, so perhaps no time has passed at all.
No. Harry Potter is with us forever.
Forever, exactly. Exactly.
But
it's great to be back.
Things have been good with you?
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, you know, what's happened in the past couple of years, but it's hard to compact it all into a couple of sentences. You know, life has taken me down different directions.
Oh,
and
good.
You know, I've done different things, and as I'm sure everyone has. That sounded really philosophical. I don't know if I meant it to sound that philosophical, but stuff is good. Stuff is going well.
Good. Well, that kind of reminds me of what people tell us a lot about MuggleCast, that they've grown up with the show. Which we all have in a way, especially when we're around it for 8 years.
That's true. Wouldn't it be interesting to get a psychologist in and make them study how it's changed us?
Yes.
See how it's made us develop.
Yes.
You know?
They would find in me that it's driven me crazy. I've become a madman.
Perhaps they'd lock you up, you know, section you, something like that.
Andrew can't be on the final episode because he mentally can't handle it.
Yeah.
He took Jamie's advice. It was a terrible decision. I think they'd find that a lot of us are more, at least for me, you know, more confident and develop sort of our public speaking and maybe like theatrics a little bit, you know, for live events and stuff. So I think it's a lot. It's been, the majority of it has been quite positive.
Saying that though, I could have said, you know, it helped me develop my public speaking. Sure, it has done, but I did an event the other day for work, where I had to go on stage and talk in front of 230 people. And my talk was about three things. And right at the beginning, I outlined these three things, and said what they were. And then I went through each one in turn. So I said, the first one is this, and it's important because of this. Second one is this, and it's important because of this, you know, speech making 101. Yeah. And then I went on to the third one, and I was like, and the third one is, and it completely went from my head.
Oh,
like,
no.
I said, the third one is, and then I said, and it's obviously really important, like the other two, and it is. And I still didn't know what it was, and I just had to stand there looking stupid. And thankfully, because I'd gone through them earlier, someone from the audience called out, you know, what it was, and I said thanks, and then moved on. But it was absolutely mortifying.
You didn't have a PowerPoint or anything you could refer to?
Well, this is the thing. I didn't bring any notes up because when I have notes, I just tend to stare at them. But I didn't know that they were going to have LCD screens at the front of the stage that face the person speaking. If I'd known that, I'd have just put the 3 points on there, and I couldn't have messed it up. But because I didn't, everyone thought I was a rank amateur.
Well, maybe if
you should just point them to our website, Jamie.
Yeah.
Be like, I promise I'm good. I used to do this podcast. I was really good on it. But maybe this episode will help you refocus.
Yeah, yes. Maybe. I might send them an email, actually, pointing them to the download link and just say, please have a listen to this and see if it's okay.
So we'll invite you back.
Go ahead,
that you say that because I have this big presentation coming up on Friday, and now I'm not sure.
Don't joke, Micah.
But I do have a PowerPoint.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I mean, that helps. I should have just done that. But I actually did a course before I did this presentation course, and the two things that I got out of it, I don't know if you do presentations a lot, but the two sort of big lessons that the guy told me was, in terms of structure, he said, tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you've told them. And if you do that, they know, people take it in, you know, because they, it's like brainstem apparent. And he also said the ability of the audience to understand what you're saying is always slower than the speed at which you deliver it. So you need to, you know, really slow down, which I tried to do, but I was nervous. So I don't know.
Well, you slowed down pretty well once you got to the third point, actually.
Yeah. Fair
you were
point.
Waiting with bated breath.
I couldn't be slower, to be honest. So,
but I would agree that this show has definitely helped me develop public speaking skills, and just in terms of like doing good at what we do here on this podcast, because now we do multiple podcasts. So, No, it's been very beneficial, this show.
Just to put you on the spot here, Andrew, you've done loads of podcasts since, you know, this one. This is still your baby, still your favorite?
Yeah, absolutely. No, we've gotten in a very good, I think Mike and Eric would agree, we've gotten in a very good vibe with this show where I don't feel pressured doing MuggleCast because I know we have a good rapport, all of us, and then when we bring on extra people as well. It's usually the core of the show has been Micah, Eric, and I for some time, but the core of the so we've just been very comfortable with that, I think.
Yeah, being able to just get together, no drama, talk about whatever is happening in the Harry Potter world is a really gratifying experience.
Yeah, and so long as there's stuff to talk about, of course.
Oh, yeah, no, and we're not pressured to put out content more often than it is needed.
Yeah.
So that's really nice.
All right, guys, let's stop all the backslapping. Let's be critical.
Hey, you,
aren't we awesome? You,
what can we improve?
No, well, a big focus of this show, of this episode, is going to be The Cuckoo's Calling, because it continues to be very interesting how it all played out. On the last episode, we recorded the day or the day after The Cuckoo's Calling was revealed to be J.K. Rowling, and now we're learning how it all came to be. There's two parts to this story. As it turns out, the reason that J.K. Rowling decided to reveal that she was the author was because the Sunday Times in the UK did their own digging after one of their writers had tweeted, "Yes, I read The Cuckoo's Calling and it was quite good." Somebody replied to her and said that book was written by J.K. Rowling. And the Sunday Times editor replied to this anonymous person and said, "How do you know for sure?" And the anonymous person just said, "I just know." And then from there, they decided to do some digging. They connected the dots between, first, the publisher of The Casual Vacancy and The Cuckoo's Calling were both Little Brown. They sent The Casual Vacancy, The Cuckoo's Calling, and Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows to a linguistics expert who found significant similarities between the three books. And after those two pieces of evidence, so the Sunday Times decided to email J.K. Rowling's people and say, "Just give me a straight answer. I believe that The Cuckoo's Calling is J.K. Rowling." And then the next morning, J.K. Rowling's people replied and said, "Yes, it is. And here's a statement from Rowling." And that was that. And then in terms of the anonymous Twitter user, who that was, it turns out that it was so the only people who knew that J.K. Rowling wrote The Cuckoo's Calling was J.K. Rowling, probably her husband, Neil Blair, her agent, and one or two other select people, including a couple people.
I knew too.
Who are, oh, you knew?
Just didn't tell anyone, yeah.
Who were, lawyers. And so, Eric, did you throw this link in? Do you want to tell us about this part?
Yeah. So, Jamie, you showed a lot more restraint than, not to name names here, but Chris Gossage from apparently Russell's Solicitors is one of J.K. Rowling's law firms who she, you know, I'm not clear their relationship, but they had something to do with The Cuckoo's Calling, as well as protecting J.K. Rowling's assets because they knew about this book. Being really by Rowling, and evidently one of the partners at Russell's Solicitors named Chris Gossage, and this is all in a statement which we found actually from Newsrounds, or formerly Newsrounds, I guess, Lizo?
Lizo. Lizo Mazimba. Yeah,
we love Lizo Mazimba. I found it on his Twitter, actually, these two statements, and basically it appears that this guy, Chris Gossage, told his wife's best friend, like at a party or something, in confidence, he was just
alcohol
like,
"Alcohol was involved.
Hey, probably. This is in fact, I think so too. But he was just like, 'Hey, this is, you know, really by J.K. Rowling. Well, his wife's friend is the one who then tweeted at the Sunday Times. And this all kind of came out and was revealed. They did background searches. She's a mother of two in Surrey, living in Surrey.
We are going to continue with today's episode of MuggleCast in just a moment. But first, it is time to remind you that today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of MuggleCast, Audible is offering you a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their great service, and I think you know what I am going to recommend this week. It is probably the biggest no-brainer, the easiest prediction ever. The Cuckoo's Calling by Robert Galbraith, or J.K. Rowling. It has been available on Audible since mid-May. It's been secretly waiting for you to take a listen to. A new piece of work by J.K. Rowling. If you are going to be out and about this summer and maybe you can't get a copy of the book, maybe it's hard to get, maybe you just want to try a new way of digesting a book, Audible is the way to do it. And The Cuckoo's Calling, J.K. Rowling's second post-Harry Potter novel, is probably the best book to try. Visit audiblepodcast.com/mugglecast. If you're a new subscriber to Audible, you can get it for absolutely free. audiblepodcast.com/mugglecast. And we thank Audible for their support of the show and giving you an opportunity to get J.K. Rowling's new book for free. So whose side are we on? J.K. Rowling's side or this leaker's side?
I mean, it's so hard to know until you know the full side of the story, you know. I mean, one of the things, Eric, just to pick up on there, isn't it weird how in these news stories they always focus on the person, like, you know, what's Judith done in her life? You know, they just go back and trawl through all the haze of her past to see, you know, if there's something in there that could have, you know, predisposed her to this or something. It's just odd.
That's exactly right. I mean, this article that I linked to from here is from the London Evening Standard or something, and it's all about this lady, this woman, Judith Caligari. They refer to her as the deep throat at the center of the publishing.
Right, yeah.
It's just like blowing it up way out of proportion. You know, and they actually, I believe, probably took a photo from her Facebook profile, like found this woman and unmasked her. So that bit of it is actually uncomfortable, the way that names are getting named, as you're saying. But I think, you know, because of how much money is associated with this, and the fact that it's J.K. Rowling's, you know, confidence that was broken in this law firm, Russell's had to issue this statement isolating that Chris Gossage gentleman. And then J.K. Rowling had to issue a statement, I guess, or she did issue a statement pretty much the same time her lawyers did. And I'm going to read that right now. It's very quick. It says, "I have today discovered how the leak about Robert's true identity occurred. A tiny number of people knew my pseudonym, and it has not been pleasant to wonder for days how a woman who I had never heard of prior to Sunday night could have found out something that not many of my oldest friends did not know. To say that I am disappointed is an understatement. I had assumed that I could expect total confidentiality from Russell's, a reputable professional firm, and I feel very angry that my trust turned out to be misplaced."
Closed speculation that the publisher decided to leak this on purpose. Some were wondering if they did it to boost sales, which would have been understandable, but I think they had a good relationship with J.K. Rowling after the Casual Vacancy and now this, and Rowling wanted to keep it a secret and then unveil it on her own accord.
Right.
We remember her original statement earlier this month when she said, you know, "I was hoping to keep it a secret a little while longer." Mm. So, I have to be honest though, if I was at a party and I had this little secret, I don't think I could keep it in. I'd have to tell somebody that I knew.
There's
no,
a part.
I wouldn't.
Yeah, there's
I take pleasure in the fact that I knew something. I'd feel like the big cheese, you know? It'd be like, who killed JFK? You know?
Right, right. Do you know?
I do, but if I tell you, I believe I'm going to get some people in suits with machine guns busting down my door anytime soon. So I really couldn't, you know?
No, but there is that part in all of us, and part of this story coming out, I felt like, oh, it's a very human mistake to make. It just felt like something that possibly, if I weren't careful, I would do, you know, because there's certain news that you get so excited. And on Twitter, you think everything's anonymous. On the internet, you think everything's anonymous. Even though her Twitter name was pretty much her real name, Jude Caligari, I think it was on Twitter. But you just think that it's anonymous and that you can get away with that. And it's just kind of like teasing somebody with your knowledge and all that. But as it turns out, you know, that Sunday Times person was determined to follow up, and they did.
I'm sorry, I don't agree with that you think it's anonymous. I mean, surely if the Snowden stuff and you know, has taught us anything, it's that you really can't assume you've got any privacy online whatsoever. This woman is clearly, well, I say clearly, allegedly, you know, perhaps just thought she wanted to feel the bit of power from it. I mean, no good could come of it, I don't think. You know, it was never going to end well when you make that first step to go on Twitter and say, I just know. I mean, if you're saying that, you have to question her motive, surely. If she's saying, I just know, it isn't because she doesn't believe in, you know, in the anonymity when it comes to authors is a good thing. You know, I mean, why is she doing it? It seems a bit selfish.
But I don't know. I kind of imagine this to be like a drunken conversation, and she like accidentally did it and then realized her mistake afterwards.
Well, keep your mouth shut then, you know?
That's possibly true, but the Twitter was deleted. The account was deleted shortly following that I just know tweet, which really does make me question the motives then, because it's like, well, did she realize she had done something wrong or what happened? Because the account is removed. And it was when the Sunday Times author wanted to follow up, it was removed. It was gone. It was missing. So it felt like a mystery.
It could have also been ignorance. Like, she didn't know the enormity of the secret.
Mm. Like, she didn't understand. Hold on a second. Why are we blaming poor Judith here? I feel like, if anything, she is not to blame. It's the person who told her in the first place.
I think that's a fair point, because look, she's got no responsibility. She isn't, you know, technically she hasn't been instructed by Rowling to keep her secret a secret.
Right.
The partner who works for Russell's is, you know, he's paid to act in the interests of the company, and giving away this secret is not really acting in the interest of the company when they're going to lose a key client and get their name plastered all over the news. So yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair point. It's his fault.
Yeah. And I mean, J.K. Rowling, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. If we're talking about, the statement from Rowling, she just, I don't want to say it's portraying her as a victim, but she does just see, she uses words like, I feel very angry. You know, and it has not been pleasant. And you just wonder, okay, she's through hell. But to Andrew's question, whose side are we on? Obviously, that's quite polarizing. But my question is, my question's about, you know, how long would have Rowling waited? And this is the problem, is that it's also come out. And I don't know if we're going to also talk about this, but essentially she said, it was either in a later statement or something, that I think it was on the website, the second book in this Robert Galbraith has been written in this Robert Galbraith series. And my problem is, if that book is complete, you know, and was set to release next year, I think it's quite likely that she wasn't going to tell anybody until maybe even after the second book was
maybe
out.
Maybe two or three books. Yeah.
Two or three books. No, but I have a really big problem with that, because I think, well, wouldn't I be angry if I found out that J.K. Rowling not just published one book, but two or three. And meanwhile, there's nothing happening on her Twitter. She's completely dead to the world, silent. You know, this author whom I love and whom I love reading is essentially not letting me read her work, is not sharing with me.
I think that's an interesting point. I mean, it's a very interesting point, definitely. Yeah, I think it all depends on how much you feel she has a sort of psychological contractual obligations to her fans from the Potter series. You know, I don't know if you guys like Chris Rock, but he always used to say that he shouldn't have to act as a role model for young people. You know, his job is an entertainer. It's not just because he's in the public eye. He doesn't owe something to anyone. I mean, I don't know. It depends. Yeah. What you think she owes us, really. I don't know. I agree. It's a bit, you know, to have that revelation come at a later date, it does feel a bit, you know, I don't know, like a secret's been uncovered. But then I guess, you know, she can't cater for everyone. She has to cater for the general public rather than her fans, if that makes sense.
Well, we know why she did this, though. She did this because she wanted to write without the pressures of having all these people on top of her. You know, she got to do it privately, enjoy publishing a book for her first time, really, as somebody who's an unknown. I mean, it must have been so rewarding for her to do it this way. And I don't think she owed us anything in terms of, like, you know, I would have been fine with her releasing, unveiling it. Let's say, I bet she would have done it before the holiday. So they could get some good holiday sales out of this.
Yeah.
But no, I think if she waited even till the end of this year, I think that would have been completely fine. But so Jamie, when did you first hear about, like, how did you hear that the Cuckoo's Calling was J.K. Rowling?
Oh, I think it was a news website, BBC News. And, I mean, I was just stunned. To be honest, the first thing that jumped out at me was what happened after it came out, rather than the story. I mean, it, you know, it's a leaking story. It happens. It just has more relevance for us because, you know, we're fans of Harry Potter, but, you know, this type of stuff, I guess, happens all the time. What hit me was, you know, she sold 1,500 copies between when it came out and when it got leaked, which I've heard is great for a first time hardback author. You know, yes, yeah, it's a good result. You know, it's not incredible, but I think any person should be pleased with that. And then after it came out, I think her Amazon sales rank went up like 507,000% or you know, something. And I just think that scale is something to sit up and take note that someone can generate that, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just incredible.
Yeah. She went to number one. She went straight to number one.
That was based on name alone again, because it's like, it's the J.K. Rowling book.
So did you get a copy, Jamie? Did you try?
I haven't read it yet. No, I've not. I'm
planning on it.
I will. I don't think I'm going to get a copy yet. I want to wait for the buzz to sort of die down. Then I can sort of read it in my own time and just sort of reflect on it. Have you guys read it?
No, wait, you said that you knew, so you have actually already read the book, right?
I mean, you caught me there. I just didn't want to. I've just had a phone call from my agent saying that I'm in trouble. So I'm just trying to tone it down a bit.
Boys, have you read it yet?
Micah, how far are you?
I got the book on Friday. I ordered it through barnesandnoble.com. It got here pretty quickly, actually. I have not read it at all yet.
And I assume your copy says J.K. Rowling inside.
It does. It does say J.K. Rowling.
Oh, wow.
That's the thing. This is the thing. So they did the second print run with 300,000 copies. They all now say Robert Galbraith is a pseudonym for J.K. Rowling inside of the book. So these copies that people may have that don't say that are going to be really valuable. And I mean, as we talked about on the last episode, when we first discovered this happened, I personally ran out to my local bookstore. I couldn't find any. They said they had them in stock, but, then one of my friends nearby was able to go to a bookstore and he found four copies. He purchased all four copies.
Nice.
Gave one to me. He's holding on to an extra one for eBay purposes.
Yeah. Yeah. So are one of my friends. They have it sealed up.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, it's just, it's unbelievable that just the hype that surrounded it. It just, but you had to act quick and not everybody was even quite innocently, not many people were in a position to really do that. And that time between when all the copies on store shelves were missing or sold, and the time that the book's, you know, second print run was fulfilled, that was a harrowing week and a half to 2 weeks where people couldn't get the book unless they wanted to do the ebook, which I'm sure is quite easy to do. But it's just, you know, if you wanted the hard copy book, you couldn't do it.
Right. So now it's everywhere. And now it says J.K. Rowling inside. I've been, every time I step in a bookstore now, if I see it there, I go and look through the stack of books in hopes that there's a lone copy without J.K. Rowling's name inside. And if I do find one of those, you can bet I'll be buying it.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's the thing. I was in a charity shop 2 days ago, and I found a first edition paperback of The Prisoner of Azkaban. And my smartphone broke a while ago, so I couldn't look online and see if it's worth anything. So I bought it. It was only a pound. And then I went online, and apparently it isn't worth anything. So bit of a shame,
though.
yeah, paperback Prisoner of Azkaban, but first edition, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think hardback's where it's at, right?
But yeah, that still I came out. So, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
I think the internet is lying to you, Jamie. I think it's worth something.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
I would hold on to it, or maybe you can take it to a J.K. Rowling signing and it'll be a little bit worth a little bit more. Go ahead.
I might ask her to sign it, Robert Galbraith now.
That's the thing is, I have a copy of Casual Vacancy signed by J.K. Rowling from when she came to New York, but her J.K. Rowling signature is really beautiful. I would like to see her Robert Galbraith signature, just throwing that out there.
Well, she did it. She signed actually a couple copies of The Cuckoo's Calling in the UK.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But surely people went up to her and they're like, oh my God, I love your work. Well, you don't look like a Robert.
No. Apparently, no. It wasn't like a public book signing. It was like something here. This one.
Yeah. I'll take it.
It has one bid. But I think she did this instant message. Boom. That's the signature. I bet she did it with like her opposite hand because it doesn't look like her rolling signature at all. But this is the one I keep seeing.
Wow.
I can't remember why she signed it.
So it
must have been
£800 at the moment.
Yeah. The mail
it's quite a nice autograph, isn't it?
All right. It looks like a man's autograph.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
I think she did it as like a thank you to the publisher or something like that.
That's extremely sexist, Andrew. Why is it like a man's autograph?
But because it's dirty and chicken scratch.
I can't believe it.
Just like my signature.
There's a quote from Joe saying she channeled her inner bloke. Seeing this autograph, I would agree with that. I can barely make out the R. it's like robot. Yeah, right, robot Galbraith is who wrote this.
Robot,
it's like robot. Yeah, look at that. No, but so, I'm about 100 pages in to answer your question. I'm about 116. Love the book. I am planning on reading substantially
the whole
more.
Thing.
Yeah. So yeah, the whole thing as opposed to Casual Vacancy.
So Jamie, have you read the Casual Vacancy, by the way?
Oh no, I haven't yet. No, okay. I need to. I was following it on Amazon when it first came out for a few weeks, and the reviews were just so all over the place. Again, I wanted to let it die down before I read it, but I haven't got around to it. It came out just before I went traveling, and I was going to get it for that, but it was so bulky that I didn't. But no, I'm going to get it. I'm actually going on a holiday in about a month, so I might take it then.
Nice. Is it on paperback yet? Do you know?
Yes.
Yeah,
it just came out.
Okay, well then that'll be hopefully a little lighter for travel reading. I did want to mention though, Jamie, you mentioned the 1500 copies is fairly successful. There is a quote somewhere. I wish I could find it. J.K. Rowling said, relating to those sales, that it was comparable to the same period of time for author J.K. Rowling, meaning like I think when Harry Potter first started out, that is similar.
Yeah. Yeah.
To the first 3 months of sales for probably only the first Harry Potter film or book, first Harry Potter book, Philosopher's Stone in the UK. So that is actually really exciting. And the little stories we're hearing about, you know, life before people knew are that certain people did find this book and it was offered at like, you know, in their local book club or something. You know, it was a recommended read, kind of word of mouth, guerrilla, you know, information spreading and that this book was getting some traction, but 2 months is just not a lot for any of that to really happen. So it's nice to hear that it was sort of starting out, but I do feel like the reveal came a little sooner, for everybody. I mean, maybe if they had planned the release of the information, there would have been more stock in stores and another print run at the very least. Do you think?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think so. I mean, people at work were saying, you know, it's a cover up. This was all planned from the beginning by the people who walk in the corridors of power. You know, that
people
type
are so
of thing.
Cynical.
But yeah, I know. And also, I mean, you know, a law firm has got smeared. I don't think any law firm is going to allow themselves to get smeared, even if they get a kickback from it. And also, like you say, there's no stock. So if it was a PR stunt, it was crap.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that this was a legitimate accident. Well, purposeful by the person who leaked it, but I believe that there was no intention of a sudden boost of sales, at least not right now.
Well, If I can compare this to something just for a minute, I mean, I'm surprised that this person hasn't lost his job.
How do you know he hasn't?
Well, I don't, but I'd be surprised if he didn't, because, you know, say it's the equivalent of me working at a sports league and I find out that this player is about to be traded to another team, and say he's a high profile player, and, you know, I'm out at the bar later on that night, and they're still working through the specifics of the contract, and I let it slip to somebody who happens to be there that this guy is getting traded to another team, and that news leaks on Twitter, and all of a sudden it blows up, and maybe things don't get finalized, or the trade doesn't go through, and all of a sudden all this information is out there, I'd think that if that got traced back to me, I'd probably be fired.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, right. I think so. I mean, well, can't you... Wouldn't you get prosecuted as well? I mean,
you could
possibly.
You could.
Do you sign an NDA?
Sign a what?
NDA.
NDA.
Non-disclosure. You have to keep a secret, basically. Yeah.
Well, it's just like, it's just that anything that is discussed in that sense within a company, you know, to your point, you can't be disseminated to the public unless you're cleared to do so. So I think that it's a similar situation with this person.
Well, especially to law firm. This information, even the information about a trader or a player being traded, that information alone is worth millions sometimes, depending on who it is. And that's a very real financial, amount to be tied to information like this. When you're a law firm that is handling items with such value as the next J.K. Rowling novel. And like Jamie was saying, I mean, no law firm's going to let themselves get smudged. Like, this is severe. I mean, Rowling herself is saying, I expected this from Russell's. I expected full confidentiality. Shame I didn't get it. You know, and it's just complete trash talking. It's like, but Russell's looks terrible. I would be very surprised if that guy stayed on.
Well, and not to mention, J.K. Rowling is probably just not going to work with them anymore.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's what I would. Right, exactly.
But how many other businesses are also pulling out because this guy had this moment of weakness, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah. This is awful for the company. This is not fun to be that guy. Anyway.
Although, one last point. Who was the guy who said all publicity is good publicity?
So maybe they'll get Oscar Wilde.
No, I think it was it Peter Drucker, the ad guy? Anyway, I don't know.
Oh, well, I know Oscar Wilde said the only thing worse than people talking about you is people not talking about you.
Yeah, similar. So, very similar.
There's that quote.
Yeah.
Well, this certainly, you know, it's safe to say that this didn't negatively affect the book. Of course, we know that the sales have been through the roof, and I'm sure the publisher is happy that it's selling so well.
Oh, yeah.
Despite the lukewarm response to the casual vacancy, I mean... You know, J.K. Rowling, as I think we've discussed previously, I think she has only so many chances for people to get so excited about each and every book. If she wrote three not great books in a row, people would be losing interest unless she wrote more in the same theme as Harry Potter or went back to young adult. I mean, she still hasn't returned to young adult writing.
Right.
But it looks like the reviews for Cuckoo's Calling have been very good. I'm excited to read it. But so now there are the movie rights in question, and they are reportedly in a hot bidding war. Deadline says that multiple studios are trying to get the movie rights to The Cuckoo's Calling, and WB, who created the Harry Potter films, may have the edge because of the relationship J.K. Rowling already has with them.
It's just so interesting because nothing that's a book can stay a book in today's world.
Right.
Like nothing that's successful and a book can just stay a book. The casual vacancy even, which may or may not be successful in our eyes, is going to be a TV series for the BBC or a miniseries, I should say.
Yeah, but everything that she writes can't stay as a book. I mean,
yeah.
Or anything that, yeah, it's like you say, develops a huge fan following. They just try and squeeze it and squeeze it.
There has to be like a tie-in
film,
graphic novel.
Two films.
But you know,
yeah. Like
or a stage Rowling, show even.
But to play devil's advocate, Rowling is to blame here too. She doesn't have to sell the rights. She could tell them to screw off.
Yeah.
I mean, why is she doing this? She has all the money in the world.
Why wouldn't she though? Yeah, but it isn't about, for her, I don't think it's about money. I mean, when people get get rich, people surround them and tell them how they can make more money. I think, you know, that's what people have done to her and what people continue to do to her. If, I mean, if you write a book and you pour your sort of creativity and, you know, time into it over 2 months, you, I guess you want to see that go as far as it can, regardless of money.
Yeah. So I guess you're saying she's doing it more for Christopher Little, or sorry, for Neil Blair.
Well, not her. I mean, they take their cut. You know, she can't turn it into a film. The whole process relies on middlemen and you know, companies and, you know, but I think she's doing it because she wants her work to go as far as possible. And she puts it with the most trusted people who can make that happen in a way that she wants it to happen.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I think the fact that she has so much control over it is what's key in all of it, is that because not many authors would have that level of control.
And yeah, we have to remember that this is going to be a series, so this could potentially be a big movie franchise too.
Oh gosh.
That's true.
I mean, for me, like, and I really do and am enjoying this book so far, but it's a standard detective novel. You know, it really is your hard-boiled detective going out and solving crimes, and that genre is excellent, but it is almost overpopulated. You know, I mean, we don't necessarily need a film. I don't feel a need for a film, even though it's a great book, even though it may change the way I think about things. It doesn't need to be a movie.
But I think it's quite interesting that she chose to A, be anonymous, and B, write in that genre, which is sort of defined by tropes, you know, because, I guess for her, she can write in any genre and she doesn't have to stick to the rules of the genre. She can do whatever she wants, but it might be quite nice as a well-known author to take that power away through anonymity and allow yourself to have to fit with the tropes of a genre and see how people judge you based on your ability to fit within a mold, but yet still do things a bit differently, you know?
Yeah, that's really what it's all about. I mean, genre writing, it takes away like a lot of the burden of, you know, completely choice. It must be relaxing to conform to certain things while still offering, like you said, your own part of it. I mean, J.K. Rowling's writing is so good in her, the way she describes a scene, and there's lots of detail. You can get an exact picture in your head without feeling like you've been reading for pages and pages because she's concise about it. She knows just what words to use. Like that's what makes the book readable.
And as if anybody needed a surprise, The Cuckoo's Calling is number one New York Times bestseller list and USA Today. So,
but I read that it didn't beat the Christian one in one list. Which one was it? Because it, there was one list that he still topped, or perhaps she topped it initially, but then quickly dropped below.
You know,
him,
I read that too.
I was quite surprised about.
I read that too, yeah. In terms of, I think it was mystery thriller novel. I'm trying to think what it would have been on for book
sales.
You said
John Grisham?
John Grisham, yeah. He's around.
No, I know he is.
Who'd have thought?
He's writing a sequel to A Time to Kill, which was obviously a very big bestseller as well as movie. So maybe that was it?
It's The Racketeer. Is that the sequel?
No, it's not. I've read The Racketeer, actually. I'm surprised that has topped, or for a time, topped J.K. Rowling.
I think it's that one.
Maybe like the first week, Grisham was still number one, and then...
Well, The Racketeer has been out for a while.
Well, maybe it wasn't that, though. Then
I found it.
It might have been another one.
I found it. It's at BBC News. Let's see. Okay. John Grisham. I'm just scrolling through to get the actual.
You're bringing the show to a halt, Eric.
Oh right, I forgot this was live to tape.
Okay, thumbs, yeah.
No. So the Rowling revelation coincided with the paperback release of Casual Vacancy, which sold 19,548 copies in the same week. So actually, once the news leaked, both Cuckoo's Calling and Casual Vacancy saw a bump in sales. By the way. I don't know if you mentioned that. So they're like, oh, J.K. Rowling has a new book. I still haven't read the old book. Shit, gotta get it. So they must have gotten it. But it says here on BBC, the entertainment news, neither title managed to topple John Grisham's The Racketeer, from the top of the chart, which shifted 24,222 copies, and 19% drop from the previous week.
But what date was this?
This was this article is dated 24th July, so it's a couple days ago.
Okay. The New York Times bestseller list, for example, this one is the August 4th list, which must have just been published. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, but so it is the racketeer, in fact.
So, that's interesting.
I guess that was doing really, really well. But isn't that strange that it sold so many? I mean, I don't know. Amazon is selling the racketeer for £3, so I you know, it's hard to compare them, really.
Did it just come out in paperback? Is that what it is? Possibly.
I don't know. Yeah, it might have been. It might have been. Perhaps we can add to the conspiracy that they were in on it as well to boost
a bit of
sales.
Racketeering going on.
It's the
official UK top 50 apparently for literature.
4th of July it came out, the racketeer in paperback. So
okay, maybe. Is he popular over there?
I think he used to be more popular than he is now. I actually read, I think, The Firm, one of his early books, and I just couldn't get into it.
No.
I thought it was really stilted.
Well,
I'm
going to be starting The Cuckoo's Calling potentially tonight because I just finished another book. So I'm ready to go, finally, after 2 weeks.
I like how we've created, with just one episode left to go after this, a new segment on MuggleCast called Bash John Grisham.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, maybe we can move on to him. New fan site.
Yeah. So let's talk some Harry Potter news now. Believe it or not, this is still a Harry Potter show, despite the first 40 minutes being about J.K. Rowling's Cuckoo's Calling. So a new cover was revealed for Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. It is, as we know, Scholastic is revealing new covers one by one for the Harry Potter books in the United States. And this one is actually my favorite. It depicts Harry and Dumbledore on the rock, on the cliff of rocks, right before entering the cave, where Dumbledore, of course, drinks that potion. I think this is my favorite. What do you guys like this one?
I think it's nice. I mean, there's a big divide between the American covers and the British covers. I mean, this wouldn't ever get put on a British cover, I don't think. It's cool. Yeah, it's cool. I think that's the ideal word for it, because it's cool, but I don't know if it's appropriate, if you know what I mean.
The purpose of this is for kids. They're going to republish these. They're going to put these new covers on paperbacks to appeal to the kids.
Well, it's more of a graphic children, yeah.
This is more of a graphic novel approach, a more anime or manga-like approach to the Harry Potter series. It's where the authors come from. It's his drawing style, his artistry. But none of these book covers are really doing it for me, following the Prisoner of Azkaban reveal. That's my favorite cover of these ones that are getting redesigned. But no, this isn't doing it for me. I mean, I think Harry and Dumbledore's journey is probably the most important part of Half-Blood Prince, but I think it's almost too obvious to do them on the rock because, you know, the US edition is them in the cave. So it feels like he didn't stray far enough from the other cover, you know,
and
if you're talking
about. I've only just noticed this, but Harry looks kind of odd, doesn't he?
In it. Well, just cartoony. I mean, I wouldn't say odd.
Okay,
well,
sorry.
He's also wearing like a cape, which I guess is what he's wearing in the book, because there's a movie poster version of this same scene, actually, if you guys remember. And it looks very similar, where Harry and Dumbledore are standing on top of a rock. With their, you know, it's windy and the sea.
Right.
Yeah, so it's very similar to that. Even the colors, I think, very similar. Nonetheless, I was actually at the party at Comic-Con where they unveiled this, and I got a lithograph, which I'm really excited about. Because it's
nice one there, Andrew. Just drop in what you've been doing recently.
You could have come. I'm a big fan of this one. And the final cover, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, will be unveiled this Wednesday on Harry Potter's birthday in New York City.
Where is this?
Sorry to say it again, Jamie, but I will be there too.
Will you be there? Where is it? It's Scholastic.
Yeah, it's Scholastic. Yeah, they're gonna do a party. It's gonna be like a kids' party. It's not gonna be like real fun.
There's no alcohol,
is what you're
saying. Right. The Half-Blood Prince one had an open bar. It was so much fun, but this one's gonna be like for kids.
Well, that's really in the spirit of children's books, isn't it? Open bar.
Yeah, well, you know, there are nobody's kids, and nobody's a kid anymore. We're all legally able to drink. No, but yeah, Micah, you should come because I'll be there too. And well, apparently there's gonna be like this thing where you can like pose inside of the picture, like, you know, you could stick your head through a hole and it's like you're hairy
and you're on the cover.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
This is your chance.
Oh, they've been doing that for years, haven't they? Yeah, will they ever get old? I don't think they will. People see them and they just can't. They just can't resist putting their heads through it, can they?
No, it's so great. So, by the way, for anybody in the New York City area, it's a public, it's open to the public. It's at noon at Scholastic's headquarters in New York City. So, this Wednesday, July 31st, Harry Potter's birthday. So come on out. And by the way, we've been talking about all this art. And how great it is that they're revealing each cover one at a time. Like, you know, they could have revealed all seven covers at once, but it would have been exciting for a day and that's it. This is a much more exciting way to do it. They still have yet to reveal.
So they're milking it.
They are milking it, but I think it's good, especially because Harry Potter fans are looking for something to look forward to. And we've been able to look forward to these.
Very true.
They still have the back covers to reveal and the spines, which when all put together will reveal one image.
No. I'm going to put my foot down here. That's milking it. That is milking it. You can't have a spine release party.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to have a spine release
party.
They
can and they will, Jamie.
Yeah, they probably will. They can do anything, right?
Do we know that there are images on the back covers?
When I was at this party, the guy in one of these pictures.
Oh, you were there, were you, Andrew?
You hear? I was at this party, and then it's free alcohol. No.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
I was speaking to the Scholastic guy, and he told me this, that there's going to be art on the back and on the spine. And as we've already spoken about, the box set holds all of them will have art as well. So, Jamie, I'll give you the RSVP info for the box set reveal party.
Nice. Are you gonna cover my costs?
I don't know. I don't even know. I don't even know if there's a party. I was just joking.
Oh, right. Okay.
And an inside flap reveal party. It's gonna be awesome.
Oh, yeah. Nice. That is true milking of it, isn't it?
Anyway, but people in the New York City area, come on out. Maybe it'll be like a mini MuggleCast meetup, especially if Micah comes. Pottermore, we spoke about Pottermore. Jamie, do you know about Pottermore?
What, have they changed it or something?
Are you registered on Pottermore? Like, did you get sorted?
I am, yeah. I did it quite a long time ago, though I had a look around. I haven't been on it for a while, though.
Yeah, they're kind of, it's going well. I mean, they kind of, people have been a bit bored because there's not much new. They're still releasing new content from the books, but they're trying to make some changes to appeal to a wider audience, and one of them is going to be basic information pages, a book page. And so you can click on a book and learn a very basic summary about the book, and they are expanding the commenting features. Now, there's not much to talk about here, but it's just a little update. These additions are being added when they release the final Prisoner of Azkaban chapters coming out very soon.
So when you say release the chapter, is it a new chapter?
Right. Like, well, we're in the middle. All the books are still not available on Pottermore in terms of going through them. Right now, we're in the middle of Prisoner of Azkaban. So they're going to release the final chapters of Prisoner of Azkaban in the coming weeks. And hopefully there's going to be some new writing from J.K. Rowling. I think they...
Okay, so, well, that's cool. But, yeah. I mean, just releasing the chapters sounds a bit pointless, to be honest. I mean...
Well, right. It's like moments. And in these moments, you get... You know how Pottermore works, right? You go chapter by chapter.
Yeah, but I did. Oh, okay. So wait, what we do?
Sort of. There's not like analysis and
so
stuff.
So they stole it from us.
It's not as interactive.
It's not called chapter by chapter, but
it's not as good, you mean, right?
Right, of course. It's not analysis. Like, you'll go into a chapter and then you'll click on a moment, which is like an illustration, and you can click around and like discover things, and then there may be new writing from J.K. Rowling about something related to that chapter. I think...
Oh, that's cool. Oh, that's
cool. Yeah, yeah, but...
We can't offer that, can we?
No.
No, because she never decided to come on the show. If she had at any point in time decided she wanted to join the MuggleCast panel, perhaps we could have created this website herself and made some money off of it.
Right.
But Micah, wait a minute, because you promised that J.K. Rowling would be on our final MuggleCast episode.
Yeah.
In some capacity, yes.
Yes, in some capacity. Let's not let everybody's hopes down here. That may still, that will still happen.
Right.
It'll still happen, absolutely. I'm just discouraged by the fact that their CEO left.
I mean, yeah. Right. That was the guy, man. That was the guy. He was like, back of planes, we're going to be able to do Pottermore in the back of plane seats across the transatlantic flights. And I was just like, man, this guy's great. And then he went back to what he did before he was doing Pottermore. And I was
thinking, he went back to his old job.
What did he say about all these promises? What did you say he said?
He
essentially
wants Pottermore everywhere. So he wants to get it, for example, in flight, like in flight.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. And he just wants Pottermore everywhere. So there's a little exciting news for Rupert Grint fans. He is going to be making his stage debut in the West End revival of Mojo.
Mojo.
It originally premiered in 1996. And you haven't heard of this one, Jamie?
Not Mojo. No, I don't know that.
He's going to be playing a let's see here. It's about rival gangs in 1950 Soho, and it's rock and roll scene. Grint is going to be playing an amphetamine. I don't know how you pronounce that.
Oh God, please try. That's going to really amuse me if you try.
Amphetamine addicted gang member. I knew it. It's a matter of getting it out of my mouth.
Reminds me of that time, Andrew, when you were hungry and you suggested we go and eat some Thai food.
Yeah,
do you remember
Thai
that?
Food. Yeah, like you actually like clamp your mouth around somebody's thigh.
That was funny. That was very funny.
In Soho, no, I can't make that.
Can
joke.
I get Thai in Soho and then go see Rupert?
Maybe.
And have some however you want.
Whatever you said, I can't even attempt to recreate.
And, this is kind of taking a step in Dan Radcliffe's direction, who's done numerous plays now. He's currently in the play in the West End, The Cripple of Inishman, in London. And Emma Watson, too, recently, she mentioned that she wants to do some theater. She said it could be her next move after Brown. So everybody wants to do theater.
So wait, why? I mean, is this standard now that people, you know, do films and they do a bit of theater and then they, you know, go back to films? Or is it just unique to the Harry Potter trio?
Well, maybe they're looking at Dan Radcliffe and they're like, oh, he's had a lot of success and he's probably enjoying it. I'm sure Dan Radcliffe has said good things about it. Rupert, though, hasn't really done much since Harry Potter.
Yeah, we don't really have a statement from him saying that he even wanted to continue, you know, acting. And although we do know he has tried starring in different things, there was a pilot called Super Clyde that didn't get picked up for American
CBS,
TV audiences.
Yeah.
But I think don't all the best British actors, don't they all do a lot of theater in addition to this?
I think they start a lot in theater. Ian McKellen did. Patrick Stewart did.
Right.
I guess so. I mean, I think it does help, doesn't it? I mean, what's his name? Wolverine. Hugh Jackman started off in the theater as well.
Yeah.
I think helps. It gives you a more well-rounded view of acting, maybe?
I think that's probably it. The different forms allow you to really craft your skills. That's just what I think of theater. So I think it makes sense that Rupert is trying. If he does want to continue, then that's great. But what I don't know is what's with all this drug-addicted stuff that everybody's doing. For instance, we just spoke with Harry Melling, who played Dudley in the series, and he just did a show about a bunch of family of drug addicts and drug traffickers, actually. And I was just thinking, well, that's just the latest gritty topic for everybody to be talking about. I don't know. Point I'm trying to make is I prefer comedies. So I don't know. A good old Shakespearean romp. Give me that over any of that drama.
Here's a question about him, Harry Melling. He's got really skinny, hasn't he? Did he have to use fat suit, they're called, aren't they?
We spoke with him recently actually about that show, which was called the something Family Robinson, Crack Family Robinson, Smack Family Robinson.
Yeah.
That's what it was called. I spoke with him actually. He's a nice guy. Just during an interview, and he mentioned the weight loss and stuff. So that's all. I have that. I'll send you the transcript of that somewhere.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
I want to learn about his regimen. How did he do it?
But yeah, no, it's seeing that Rupert, is this a musical? I'm trying to think.
No.
Okay, I just pictured West Side Story there for a moment, but drug addicted gang member. It's a step, you know, into theater. We'll see that.
Gosh, like you say, Eric, like, people like this gritty stuff. They don't want happy stuff. I don't know why.
Right. Well, because they can relate to it. Because life is gritty, Jamie.
Yeah. Life is gritty, right?
Yeah.
In West Hollywood, yeah? Life is gritty there?
Yes. Well, it's pretty, and it's also pretty gritty. But that's why The Hunger Games is so popular right now. Because it's very relatable.
Yeah, dystopian. Post-apocalyptic. Post-apocalyptic.
The Hunger Games, I read the first one abroad, and I picked it up just because it was there. I went to one of those book swap things.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was a bit childish, if I'm honest. But I read it, and I was like, wow, this is incredible. Yeah. And then we picked up the second one and read that. And then I just actually bought Mockingjay for my Kindle. So I'm going to read that soon as well. Right. Oh, it's fantastic, the first one.
Good. Yeah, it is, isn't it? Laura describes it as dystopian for dummies.
Dystopian for dummies.
Which goes along the line of what you were saying, a bit childish. But
that's true. I think the second one is my favorite, though.
Well, the only thing that annoyed me slightly, I think, was the way she called her characters, like President Snow. Like, I don't know why, I just didn't like that name. It was a bit like Twilight naming characters conventions, like Jacob Black, like very simple, like names. I just thought it was a bit lazy. I don't know.
I think we've been spoiled on 7 J.K. Rowling books, though. To be fair,
with
surnames like Scrimgeour, you know, this is like wow.
Perhaps we're used to what's not normal, you know.
No, we're just used to authors having thought and creating their characters.
Ouch. Maybe.
Wow. Although Michael, I don't know, because I would say that Haymitch is one of the best characters. I think he's one of my favorite characters in fiction. So,
Now, Micah? And by the way, Haymitch, Katniss, Peeta. I mean, these aren't popular. These aren't common names. I mean,
first names.
Snow and Coin are pretty basic, but
first names looks like she just dropped a box of alphabet soup, you know, and came out with Katniss, Peeta, you know, but no, last name. I don't know. I think it takes something to create any character, not just a name, but I think we're right. Naming conventions do tend to be white, Snow, even some of the other characters in Catching Fire. I was just looking at the posters on Hypeable actually for the next Catching Fire, and there's like Gloss and what's the other one? Not just Gloss, like
Finnick, Mags.
No. Who's shiny or like smooth?
Oh, who's the guy, the Norse guy, you know, who throws a spear?
Brutus. Is that Brutus?
No. The guy who eats sugar cubes.
Finnick.
Finnick.
Finnick. Sorry, Finnick. Yeah. Yeah, he was quite a cool character, but a bit. I thought
he's like
painted him.
He's like the heartthrob of this next film.
Well, you have to have one in the film.
Don't you?
You know,
well,
like you need the love triangle as well. You know, between. I mean, you know, you have to have the. It's like Bella and Edward and Jacob. Yeah.
It was Cashmere. There's a girl named Cashmere.
Okay. See?
Okay.
Apparently, I was just like, yep. Bet she's got smooth skin.
So let's move on here. It's time now for a classic, Jamie's British joke of the week.
Now, you've kind of sprung this on me, haven't you?
I didn't write this.
Yeah, I wrote this, but I feel it's necessary. If we have to take a pause for you to get one.
This was such
a staple. Yes.
Oh, sorry. I thought my connection died there. Luckily enough, someone told me one at work, but I don't know if this thing that it refers to is a British thing only. So I'll try it and see how it goes down. Okay. What type of owl is the most common owl?
I don't know. What?
A tea towel. No.
That must be British.
What do you guys use then?
What do you mean?
To do? Well, we don't have tea.
You don't use it for tea.
What's a tea towel for anything?
What's a tea towel?
What do you use to dry? Like if you wash stuff up and then dry it, what do you use?
Just a towel. A dish towel. Wash towel.
Okay. A wash towel.
I think calling it a tea towel is a British thing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I take that back then and say, what type of owl is the most common? A wash towel, which doesn't really work.
No, but that was very British, and it is a British joke of the week.
That's true, second, true, so true.
Thank you, Jamie. It was enlightening.
You're very welcome.
Do you have any more, Jamie? You have no idea how much people look forward to. Our listeners have been looking forward to. So if you had another, I'd say we should definitely share.
No, I'm completely out. I've not actually heard any good jokes recently. I don't know why that is. I don't know if there's just a lack of jokes going round. But I have actually noticed that. Yeah, no, I've noticed that anti-jokes are quite popular now. Have you guys heard those? Yeah, it's like jokes which just don't make any sense at all, and they're just designed to bomb, and the fact that they bomb is funny. And now I've said that, I can't think of a single...
Like sarcasm, example, sort of?
But, yeah, I think so, yeah. But no, not really. I don't know the sort of like term behind it, but they're very strange. They're very strange. I don't know. You know, if anyone has any anti-jokes, write in, because I like them a lot.
Sure. Okay.
I got one. Hold on.
That's fine.
No.
Well, let me talk about Potted Potter.
I Googled anti-joke, and there's actually a website, anti-joke.com.
I did this too.
So maybe this is what you were going for, Jamie. So there's this kid who says, "Dear Santa, send me a brother." And then Santa replies by saying, "Send me your mother."
No, I don't think I do mean that. I don't really get that. I mean, here's what this
is. Isn't that the point?
No. I mean, it has to make some type of sense. You can't.
Okay. Well, how about this? Why did the girl smear peanut butter on the road?
Yeah, I don't know.
To go with the traffic jam.
Yeah, that's quite good, but that's just a normal joke.
No, I found one. This might be an anti-joke. Why did the boy drop his ice cream?
Because he
was hit by a bus.
Yeah, kind of, but I think that would work better. Like, why did the boy drop the ice cream? Because he wasn't concentrating on what he was doing.
Right. It's something like super obvious.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like, okay, so it'd be like, why did the chicken cross the road? Because he was just walking across the street, you idiot. Like,
yeah, basically, yeah.
That might be the original anti-joke to get to the other side.
Yeah. Oh, but, no, you say that, but I actually heard something about this the other day that I didn't realize was this explanation. Apparently, that joke is amusing because it's to get to the other side, i.e. to cross the street and go to the other side of the street, but also because if you die, you're said to go to the other side. So apparently it works on both levels, and that's why it's funny.
If his journey across the road is successful or not, it works.
Yeah, either way, he goes to the other side.
That's perfect for Schrodinger's equation, then.
Well, that was very enlightening. Have you guys, Micah or Eric, have either of you seen Potted Potter?
I have.
Okay, you have. So I actually saw it for the first time a couple days ago. It was really good. What did you think of it? Did we ever talk about it on MuggleCast?
Did we? We may have. I didn't like it at all.
Oh, really?
Unfortunately, I just felt that the problem I had with it, I can be very succinct with this, is it was too shallow. It was surface knowledge of Harry Potter only. The way it's advertised is having being like condensed seven books into an hour
minutes.
Spectacle.
That's what they say, yeah.
How many minutes?
70. 70.
Yeah. And for 70 minutes, I can't remember a single, like, intelligent thing that we did. They threw, like, a Quidditch thing. We played, like, Quidditch with a bouncy ball in the audience. Like, that was it. Yeah. Like, it was a big inflated beach ball. And that was the show. And
I liked it, but I said this to who I saw it with. I said, this is not for hardcore fans. It's just entertainment. It's just Harry Potter related entertainment. And you know, the audience really seemed to enjoy the show and I enjoyed it. But you can't take it seriously. You can't go in expecting like this is going to be a thorough review of the Harry Potter books. Yeah. It's just comedy.
Yeah. You cannot expect them to have the same level of references and I would say even respect for the source material that even StarKid has in their shows.
And as I brought up to the person I saw with, but that's good because you don't want it to appeal to a smaller audience. You want it to appeal to as broad an audience as possible.
It's almost to the point where it didn't appeal to me at all. I felt too old. I felt too old to be there. It's just given how successful Potted Potter is. I saw it when it was touring to Chicago. They did a huge tour and that in New York, and it's on taxi cabs and it's on banners and billboards to see that these guys, you know, Dan and Jake or whatever their names are, Dan and Dave, Dan and Mike, something like that, are, you know, on Broadway and Starrkid is not. That's just the biggest kick in the face.
I don't think Starrkid wants to be, though.
Well, they will eventually, but I mean, not with Harry Potter. It's just,
right.
if there's a Harry Potter show as wide as to be on Broadway, I expect it to be of a much higher caliber than just a surface shallow. Even if it's fun, even if it's entertaining, I expect it to have a little bit more to do with the books. Perhaps I'm, just expecting too much, or like, you know, I'm being too harsh about it and strict or, you know, something like that. I had fun, but if I had paid to go see it more than the 35, the tickets are even pretty expensive, but I think my friend chipped in, or maybe somebody couldn't go and I went either for free or for reduced cost. Like, if I had paid full price, I would have been very upset.
Mm. So, Eric, I can't really tell. Did you like it or?
I don't think
sorry,
you did.
Bad joke.
But it's okay. I will respect anybody who went there and had a fun
anti-joke.
Time.
Yeah,
it was amusing for kids. It really would have been, you know, a family show, which is what I guess people expect in Harry Potter.
Yeah, there were a bunch of families there.
It just it does the same thing for Harry Potter as putting it on a children's book list. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like isolates it, makes it for only kids to see and enjoy. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I see it all the time around the city. I see it actually mainly on garbage cans. Like they decorate these garbage cans and they have these little owls sticking out of the tops.
Yeah.
So,
it must be expensive because they're like right. Well, they must be like right. They're like right in Times Square. I was actually pretty surprised that must be expensive. Anyway, so Potter, I would recommend it. I enjoyed it, but like you can't go in there expecting like an actual review of the 7 Harry Potter books. It's very, very broad. Very broad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's get to some emails. We have a couple emails now. This first one is from Catherine, 16 of London, writing about the Half-Blood Prince of Cambridge.
This is perfect for you, Jamie. We got the new royal baby, and we got a British gentleman to represent.
Hey, I just have to point out, okay. Andrew, what did you say the title was again?
Okay, you think it's Cambridge, right?
Well, I don't think it's Cambridge. I know.
All right, Cambridge. Hey, everyone, I love the show. I only got into Potter in the last year, so it was great to discover that there was still an active community. So it sucks that the show is ending. I was thinking that with all the news of the royal baby, how perfect the series would be for him to read when he gets older. From an extremely young age, both the prince and Harry become famous and revered around the world. They are both expected to serve the people, even though they didn't really get to choose that they would be special. They both will live out virtually their entire lives in the public eye and will be obligated to do good for communities. They're both frequently under scrutiny from the tabloids. There's also the fact that they are both half-bloods. James was from an old noble wizarding family and Lily was from an ordinary muggle one. William is from a noble royal family and Kate is from a normal middle class one. Anyway, I just thought that there were lots of similarities between them. Also, I have a feeling that if Joe found out that the future king wanted a Marauders Era book, she would write one. Thanks for opening the door for me into the entire fandom.
I think that's a really nice email. I think it's true. All of it's true. You can't really argue with it. That would be great if, he did grow up and read all the books and got really into them. And, you know, was this kind of out there prince who liked Harry Potter? And, but hey, we could revamp the show in 20 years and have him on as a guest, right?
Yeah. When the reboot films start happening.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And they were both born as the seventh month dies. I don't know if that was thrown in here.
Nice.
Good point. Good point.
I stole that from Lord Voldemort on Twitter, though. I saw that a couple of days ago.
That's very honest.
I'm just being honest. I'm sourcing my material so I don't get a lawsuit or anything like that.
I stopped following him because he does sponsored tweets, which are so annoying.
Well, here's a question. Who is it and how have they got 2.5 million?
He doesn't reveal his identity. He does it just by being funny, and he gets lots of retweets. These fake accounts where you pretend to be somebody else in their voice are very popular.
Yeah, but I just 2.5 million. He must make a load per sponsored tweet. Probably. Although, yeah, weird.
He doesn't reveal himself. I tried to interview him for MuggleNet, and he wouldn't do it. He did want his Lord Voldemort, though, but not himself.
Oh,
strange.
It's really J.K. Rowling. That's what she's spending her time on.
By the way, she said, this emailer, Catherine, says, feeling that if Joe found out that the Future King wanted a Marauders era book, she would write one. I don't think so. I don't think even
just for him.
I don't even think this new kid could do it. George Lewis, Bumblebee, whatever.
Prince George Alexander Lewis. Excuse me.
There you go.
Okay, no, just for Jamie's sake. Actually, Comedy Central had a funny tweet I think I should share. Because the name George Alexander Lewis, and this may be, you know, it's very clearly either a royal custom or just customary to honor previous royalty or previous kings, previous rulers, that sort of thing. They named the child, you know, George Alexander Lewis, as a name. And I think it's, Comedy Central on Twitter or Indecision, whatever that account is, said his actual full name is Prince George Alexander Lewis Harry Potter Doctor Who The Beatles of Cambridge.
Nice. So, nice. That's very centered on America.
Just, yeah.
Okay, final email today. This is a bit of a long one. Hey, hey, MuggleCasters, I've been listening to your show since around episode 50, but this is the first time I'm writing to
Royal
you.
Royal family. Not sure what just happened.
From a stock, you know.
Oh, sorry. I think everything froze up for a second. We good now?
Oh, wait. Can we wait? What was your response to the Twitter thing?
The voice is going a bit weird.
Hold on. Can you still hear me? Hello? Hello?
Yeah. You went away. I don't think it.
Oh, yeah, I probably wasn't.
Recorded.
Okay. Yeah, I think it crapped out for a second. I was just moving on to the next email.
Oh, yeah. But what was your response, Jamie? Just so if you could say it again about that, that full name, the Beatles of
Cambridge. Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, humor for Americans. You just picking, like, the three British exports, you know. But there are only a certain amount of names that, you know, British sort of royal births can take. They're expected to go along a certain sort of, you know, like a certain type of name, traditional name. And also, I did read a piece on their names came from, you know, grandfathers and grandfathers rather. I think it was to be expected, and I think the bookmakers had, you know, George as the favorite, so
final
email of the day. This comes from Sophie. Hey, MuggleCasters, I've been listening to your show since around episode 50, but this is the first time I'm writing to you. I've really enjoyed MuggleCast over the years and wanted to say thank you and congrats on your amazing 8-year run. Here's hoping you all achieve such levels of success in your future endeavors, too.
Ooh.
I also have a suggestion for a favorite segment, if you still have time left in the show for it. Favorite alternate Harry Potter ending. I thought this might be fitting, since MuggleCast is formally ending its run, too. Just for kicks, here's the ending that I always kind of wanted to happen. In Book 7, Ron is killed in Malfoy Manor while attempting to save Hermione from Bellatrix.
Start off heavy, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Harry and Hermione are forced to continue the journey alone. They do defeat Voldemort during the Battle of Hogwarts, but afterwards, Ginny cannot help but partially blame Harry for Ron's death, since it was Harry's fault they ended up in Malfoy Manor in the first place, and they are unable to make up. Harry becomes the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher at Hogwarts, which he finally realized was his true calling after reflecting upon how much he enjoyed heading the DA meetings. Having broken the curse that Voldemort placed upon the position, he enjoys many years as one of the most popular DADA teachers in the history of Hogwarts. Meanwhile, Hermione moves up the ranks in the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, as in the canon. And the epilogue depicts her visiting Harry's office late one afternoon, many years after their time as Hogwarts students. They reminisce about old times and how much has changed since Voldemort's final downfall. So this is saying Ron and Hermione obviously wouldn't be together. Harry and Ginny wouldn't be together.
Because Ginny hates Harry.
Right. Does this also mean that Harry and Hermione could potentially get together?
Well, she is visiting his office late one afternoon.
And then the film closes, and yeah.
I think I could see where this is going. Yeah, fairly early on, once you remove Ginny and Ron from the equation.
But I think Sophie's a secret Harry Hermione, you know, fan.
It's true. There's one word for those people.
I like this idea of alternate Harry Potter ending. I mean, I would have preferred to see Harry not get with Ginny, and I think the movies did that for me. I can't even remember book Ginny anymore. That Ginny in the films, I think, is one of the worst casting choices ever. She's just so boring. I don't like Bonnie, right?
Well,
So I just for Harry to get with Ginny after all this. Oh gosh, come on. I would have liked to see Harry and Hermione get together.
Delusional. Yeah. Oh no, sorry, you aren't supposed to say that.
Yeah, that was the word. That was the word. Oh, you got it, Jamie. It's good to have you back.
I didn't want to say it. I didn't want to, but then I thought I just would. I'd go for it.
You might want to get that looked at, that syndrome that makes you shout things out.
This is a good question. Do you guys have any, like, if you could change one thing about the way the Harry Potter books ended, maybe something within the epilogue, would you have changed that?
I don't know. I mean, it's tough to go back now and say, I mean, the epilogue, you know, doesn't really change the story. I wonder if... I don't know. I mean, the epilogue...
It's okay. You're old, you don't remember.
No. The epilogue starts as the whole series started, you know, with them starting the journey to Hogwarts. I wonder if that, you know, sort of planted in people's ideas that that sort of thing could restart the story or something like that. I wonder if they could, you know, she could have gone for a traditional, they reminisce about old times type of thing and focus on the people who have been in the books, which, although she did, you know, in revealing who they got together with and the children and stuff, I wonder if having a focus on everything they'd gone through maybe might have been, you know, maybe. I don't know. What do you guys think?
If I could change, like, as alternate endings, I would either make Voldemort win, just for kicks.
That's the ultimate alternate ending.
That is the ultimate alternate ending, isn't it? But actually, I would just have preferred, and this goes to, like, sort of a deep-seated dislike for some of the events of Book 7, but in general, I just think Voldemort was hyped up quite a bit more than, you know, he should have been, considering... In Book 7, he just continually makes mistake after mistake after mistake. He very rushedly, you know, goes into battle with Harry and loses and dies.
Well, hey, what do you mean events that you didn't like in Book 7? Because I feel the need to pick you up on that.
Oh, okay. No, I'll definitely converse with you on it. I think, though, it just comes to Voldemort. It really comes down to Voldemort and the backstory, particularly in Half-Blood Prince, of him carefully and cautiously... lining up these Horcruxes in creation. And, you know, when he eventually finds out that Harry's been destroying them, he, if I recall, drops what he's doing, flies to Hogwarts and proceeds to make, and it's been a while, so I can't do terribly specifics, proceeds to make a lot of mistakes in terms of giving the rest of his Horcruxes up to die. For instance, the scene with Neville and the snake, he basically looks the other way and is distracted by Harry while Neville is able to escape and then...
Fair point, but I think her point, Rowling's point, is that he was suffering from hubris. He thought he had won. He wasn't really thinking that the possibility that he could lose, maybe.
I could see that, but it's so sad to see your villain, your, like, this compelling villain, arch enemy, be defeated so easily because he is proud. Like, it tells a story, but it tells a story that's been told 100 times before. I prefer the Moriarty type of villain. The villain who can't be beat, who can't be, you know, who's actually an equal match, whereas even Harry as the hero is only casting Expelliarmus. Still, you know, or even at the very end, it's just the battle I expected to be because Harry was so outnumbered or so he had the odds against him so deeply. I expected more of a
Voldemort point. But I wonder, I don't think a Moriarty figure would fit with the way the books focus on triumph of good over evil. I mean, since the beginning you knew Harry was going to win. I mean, that was absolutely clear. You know, it couldn't end with Voldemort winning. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that Moriarty, I mean, I agree with you. He's a great villain, Moriarty. And he works so well for Sherlock Holmes, but I don't know if it the same thing would work for Potter. Yeah. Interesting, though.
No, yeah. I agree. Micah, did you have any?
It's tough because I think that, you know, to take this and completely change the ending, maybe something along the lines of, and Harry woke up.
That would be awesome.
Oh yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Would you have ended it in Scar? I feel like one of us should.
No,
just
no, but maybe he wakes up after having gotten bitten from the snake that escaped from the zoo. And, you know, this has all been nothing but a dream.
Oh, yeah,
he,
yeah.
He looks into the face of his doctor and it's really Albus Dumbledore or something. You know, like.
You were there and you were there and you were there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That would be horrible.
What was the TV show that did that? Dallas, I want to say. A couple of TV shows have modeled endings.
Life on Mars. The US version of Life on Mars ended similarly.
Yeah, but you can't do that now, can you? I didn't think that was, you know, people hate that type of thing. I mean, Family Guy took the Mickey out of that, didn't they? They said there was that episode where it was all Stewie's creation, and Brian said, you know, don't you think the viewers are going to be annoyed that the entire thing's just completely made up and everything that they've been watching for the last hour didn't actually happen?
Yeah,
which is true.
It gets annoying because it's a lot of information to take in, and at the end, people just feel like it's a waste. Like, I had that question leading up to book 7. If Harry does die, won't people feel like it's a waste reading 7 books of his struggle and his journey?
I think that's true, yeah.
You know, what will it matter? All that other stuff. But I will say that the waking up thing that Micah was talking about, actually, I heard a recent panel at the cons. I've just been hearing a growing voice in the community saying, you know, because of Harry's abuse from the Dursleys, you know, being shunted in the cupboard under the stairs, that it could have caused him to create an alternate reality. Like, say he went crazy from the abuse that the Dursleys, and that caused him to hallucinate or imagine these events in which he is a hero. How deep is that?
That is Matrix level deep.
Yeah, or is it Inception? Is it quite Inception?
Oh,
or
it's
not?
Inception. Yeah, yeah. That
but
wouldn't
that
be cool?
So
a Harry Potter Inception like combination mashup type thing. I'd love to see that.
Deeper, yeah. That I think would be less cheesy than the necessarily like the Wizard of Oz, if you want to call it that reveal where it's a dream. But it still, I think, is one of those scarily, you know, you think it's plausible for a kid to go crazy like that. So, you know, just. It's a dark subject, but definitely an interesting thought.
This has been a very all over the place episode of MuggleCast, I have to say. But I expect less when Jamie's on. No, it was good. And Jamie, thank you for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me again.
And of course. Everybody wanted to have you on. So I'm sure everybody will enjoy this episode very much. We'll be back with one more regular episode of MuggleCast.
So guys, tell me. One more. Okay. I was just going to ask how many more.
Okay. Yeah. We're planning on ending it next month, which would mark exactly, 8 years. Cause we started in August 2005. So it'll be 8 years. And we've said to people, even though it'll be the end, you know, if something monumental happens, of course we'll release another episode. This is just going to be the end of regular releases. For example, if J.K. Rowling's The Cuckoo Calling.
End of an era, right?
If J.K. Rowling's The Cuckoo's Calling was unveiled this October, we would do an episode about it. Same thing when the theme park opens up next year, the new expansion opens up next year. We'd probably do an episode, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what's happening. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Once again, what are we doing now, guys? MuggleCast@gmail.com, is that?
Yeah, that's it. I think I may have to make one or two more adjustments to the feedback form, but it is MuggleCast@gmail.com to just immediately contact us. Okay. Via email.
And do that. Send in all the emails. We'll try to spend a lot of time on emails next episode. And
and also, I want some anti-jokes, so send in some anti-jokes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And MuggleCast.com, all the links you need over there. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/MuggleCast. We got the Facebook, facebook.com/MuggleCast. The fan Tumblr, which is MuggleCast.tumblr.com. And some other links there as well. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Jamie Erskine. Lawrence.
I'm Eric Skull.
And I'm Micah Tenenbaum.
Jamie gone for 2 years and steps into the number 2 position.
I just thought I was going to go for it. I wasn't sure how it would go down. You know.
It's all yours, mate.
Thanks
again, Jamie, for coming on. We'll see everybody next time for episode 269. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.